Good morning, everybody. The Joint Legislative Audit Committee will come to order, and the clerk will call the roll. Jason?
Senator Coles.
Here, obviously.
Representative Kirkman.
Here.
Senator Darling.
Here.
Senator Kapinga.
Here.
Senator Beinhout.
Here.
Senator Miller.
Here.
Representative Mako. Representative Nygren. Representative Sargent.
Here.
Representative Brousseau.
And the roll will remain open for the delinquent legislators. So we've got Audit Report 16-6, Wastewater Permitting and Enforcement, that came out some 6 months ago. We'd like to bring up Joe Christman and his great team for a presentation. Joe?
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair, committee members. Joe Christman, State Auditor and Director of the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau. As the Co-Chair noted, we're discussing Report 16-6, which relates to wastewater permitting and enforcement. This audit was published by the Bureau in June of 2016, and focuses on really three populations within the wastewater management area at DNR. These populations would include industrial municipal facilities as well as the concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. So DNR administers the Wisconsin Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or WPDES. That program regulates the discharge of pollutants to surface water and to groundwater. And as part of its responsibility, DNR is required to ensure that approximately 1,250 municipal wastewater treatment plants, industrial wastewater treatment facilities, large livestock animal farms known as concentrated animal feeding operations are all complying with the terms of their permits. Wastewater permits are issued for five-year periods and typically place limits on the type and concentration of pollutants that may be discharged. They place ongoing monitoring and reporting requirements on permittees and establish requirements for practices such as waste collection systems and land application procedures for manure. I'm joined today by Paul Stieber, who led the audit team, and Paul will briefly summarize our findings for you.
Good morning. Expenditures for the wastewater program increased from $9.3 million in fiscal year 05-06 to $10.4 million in fiscal year 14-15, or by 11.7%. In both years, salaries and fringe benefits comprised over 90% of total program expenditures. Expenditures for the program are funded by a combination of state, federal, and program revenue. Almost all fee revenue is generated through an annual fee assessed on permittees. $61.4 million of the $62.2 million in fees paid by permittees was deposited into the state's general fund. Total fee revenue declined from $6.2 million in fiscal year 05-06 to $5.4 million in fiscal year 14-15. DNR's primary tool for regulating wastewater discharges is the issuance of wastewater permits. As shown in the slide, the number of wastewater permits issued by DNR each year, which includes the reissuance of existing permits, has fluctuated over time. The number declined from 239 in 2005 to 118 in 2011, but increased to 237 in 2014. The largest annual decrease in the number of permits occurred in 2011, which DNR attributes primarily to staff retirements in that year and to the time taken by DNR to modify permit requirements as a result of administrative rules that became effective in 2010. Staff of the Environmental Protection Agency indicated that the size of a permit backlog is one indicator of how well a state's wastewater program is administered. Permits that are not reissued before they expire are administratively extended and become part of a backlog. DNR established a goal to limit its permit backlog to no more than 10% for both municipal and industrial permits and to no more than 15% for CAFO permits. From 2005 through 2015, DNR met its goal of having no more than a 10% backlog for municipal permits for four of these 11 years, but never met this goal for industrial permits. In addition, DNR met its goal of having no more than a 15% backlog for CAFO permits for nine of the 11 years we reviewed. It is DNR's goal to inspect major municipal and industrial permittees at least once every 2 years, inspect minor municipal and industrial permittees at least twice during each five-year permit term, and also inspect CAFO permittees at least twice during each five-year permit term. The extent to which DNR met its goals for inspecting major municipal permittees declined from a high of 92% during the two-year period from 2005 through 2006 to a low of 45% during the two-year period from 2010 through 2011. The percentage of major industrial permittees inspected at least once within each two-year period declined from a high of 95% during the two-year period from 2005 through 2006 to a low of 21% during the two-year period from 2010 through 2011. The percentage of minor municipal permittees inspected at least twice within each five-year period declined from a high of 70% during the period from 2005 through 2009 to a low of 47% during the period from 2008 through 2012. The percentage of minor industrial permittees inspected at least twice within each five-year permit period declined from a high of 43% during the period from 2005 through 2009 to a low of 25% during the period from 2007 through 2011. The extent to which DNR met its goal for CAFO inspections increased from a low of 20% from 2005 through 2009 to a high of 48% from 2010 through 2014. We found that from 2006 through 2014, records indicate that DNR conducted inspections of 17 CAFOs after their permits had already been reissued. We also found significant differences in the extent to which DNR achieved its inspection goals for municipal, industrial, and CAFO permittees among its five regions. We assessed DNR's compliance with its policies for determining when notices of violation should be issued in response to violations by municipal and industrial permittees. We reviewed violations for exceeding the amount of pollutants discharged in treated wastewater, which is known as effluent, and for late reporting. We found that DNR issued notices of violation for only 33 of the 558 instances, or 5.9%, in which a notice of violation should have been issued from 2005 through 2014. Moreover, of the 33 notices of violation that DNR issued, 17, or 51.5%, did not address all of the effluent and reporting violations for which a notice of violation should have been issued. The extent to which notices of violation were issued in accordance with its policies also varied among DNR's five regions. From 2005 through 2014, we found that DNR issued neither a notice of violation nor a notice of noncompliance in 83.7% of the instances in which a notice of violation should have been issued to a municipal or industrial permittee. We also found the percentage of CAFO permittees for which DNR took at least one enforcement action from 2005 through 2014 ranged from 17.6% in the northern region to 56.8% in the northeast region. The northeast region was an outlier, and 19 of the 20 CAFO permittees for which DNR took five or more enforcement actions were located in this region. We included recommendations for DNR to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in November of last year on the status of its efforts in a variety of areas, such as developing and implementing a plan to further reduce the permit backlog, improving its performance in meeting its inspection goals and conducting inspections, ensuring that records of all inspections and determinations of substantial compliance are electronically recorded, and regularly assessing its performance and issuing notices of violation, and develop a strategy to increase the consistency between its enforcement policies and its practices.
There are three ongoing issues that may come up in your conversation with the department today that we also highlighted in the audit effort. First, in October of 2015, the Department of Administration directed DNR to request a statewide multi-discharger variance from EPA because DOA estimated the cost to comply with the phosphorus limits as promulgated would total at least $3.4 billion in capital investments, with additional debt service and operating costs of up to $700 million per year. EPA approval of that multi-discharger variance was announced on February 6, 2017. Second, after conducting a legal review of the permitting program, EPA's Region 5 administrator issued a letter to DNR in July 2011 that identified 75 issues with the statutes and rules governing the program that EPA indicated needed to be addressed. Of the 64 issues affecting the municipal, industrial, and CAFO permittees included in our audit, we found that 33 were addressed as of April 2016, and those are noted for you in the status update in Appendix 4. And an additional 31 were in the process of being addressed at the time our audit was released. And then third, testing of wells in Kewaunee County had found unsafe levels of nitrates and bacteria, including and in that issue area, a DNR, there was a funded study that in November of 2015 found 34.4% of tested wells were contaminated. So DNR had formed five work groups to study that issue in greater detail and make recommendations for how best to address it. So those three issues are also noted in the last chapter of the audit. The follow-up report that was recommended under the recommendations included in the audit was provided by the department in November 18 of 2016. That's on the committee's notice today and included in your packets. We at the Audit Bureau have conducted no additional audit work, however, since the issuance of our report in June of 2016. So the information that we have to share with you would be relative to what's contained in Report 16-6. And with that, we'd be happy to respond to your questions.
Is your mic on?
Yeah. In the follow-up to the audit, Joe, the agency indicated that the permit to staff ratio was as high as 90-1. Did the LAB indicate, did they identify any instances that reflect such a high permit to staff ratio?
Senator, the staffing analysis that we did as part of the audit, the committee can refer to on page 22 and 23 of Report 16-6. So in the first case in Figure 5 on page 22, we looked at a work effort measure. So we aggregated together all of the different time codes related to activities that were spent in this area, these subject areas, support services, CAFO, and municipal and industrial permitting. And you see the results of that through fiscal 15 in the figure. And that total was about 87.1 FTE in work effort. And then what that work effort was expended on is described in Figure 6 on page 23. The hollow line being the permitting activity line and the darker line being the compliance and enforcement. But we didn't do an analysis specific to permits by staff.
Right. But in this whole, the whole situation, Joel, the staffing ratio is critical to keeping on top of the permits, getting them out expeditiously, and enforcing them when there's a notice of violation.
Yes, and DNR, I think, also noted to us as part of the effort that the staffing levels changed as other issues were noted in terms of inspection frequency and also backlog management as well.
There's been discussion of program guidance. Okay, the agency has program guidance, but the DNR did not indicate that it was outdated during your audit, correct? I mean, while you audited it, they said it in subsequent letters to the co-chairs?
So, Senator, I think what you're asking is the methodology for the audit was to use DNR's existing policy as criteria against which we measured performance.
Right.
So at the point we were using that, no matter what analysis we were referring to, we were relying on the policies that were in place at DNR at the time the audit was conducted.
Right, which is really the only way. You're either using statutes that we pass or guidance that the agency has. Are they following their own guidance?
Correct. So in this, in many of the analyses in this audit, we relied on DNR's policies to frame our analyses.
So, and in the follow-up letter, the agencies did indicate that the guidance was outdated. So that's one of the things we want to pursue here when Secretary Stepp comes up. Questions from committee members? Co-Chair Kirkman.
I just want to follow up with where my co-chair is going. So in comparison to other states, with did you look at that at all for guidance?
What was the other one?
How are Midwest states doing in comparison to us? And it, because, again, they're going to have the same type of issues when it comes to meeting those EPA standards and such.
We did look at how other states administer their wastewater programs, but in a very general way. There was far too much information for us to do state-by-state comparisons. But in our conversations with the EPA for the region that DNR encompasses, they indicated that the program is one of the best in this region.
Okay, so we have been best practices to be in sharing to other people.
Potentially, yes.
Other questions? Senator Beinhardt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to clarify some of the tables and some of the responses. And I wanted to begin with the basic cost information. On page 17, table 5, this is a table that talks about program expenditure by activity. And I was curious, I found it interesting that the second row, which is described as compliance and enforcement, when we look at the costs or the expenditures for the department, the amount of money that's spent on compliance and enforcement over a 9-year period actually dropped by 3%. And it's just part of the nature of state business that as we go on and things get more expensive and supplies and wages increase, usually there's a steady increase. And there was a big increase in some of the other areas, but a drop in compliance and enforcement and over 9 years. And I found that curious, and I wondered if you could explain more about what was going on in those expenditures on Table 5, page 17.
Thank you, Senator. Based on the information that we reviewed in our conversations with DNR staff, they indicated that over those years, they had put additional resources into issuing the permits. And so what you're seeing largely is a transfer of work time away from compliance and enforcement into more of the permitting activities. So that's why there are more expenditures for permitting and less for compliance and enforcement. There's that recognition of the shift in staff hours.
And, Senator, that's also reflected then on page 23 in figure 6 in the work effort.
Page 23, what was the?
Figure 6.
Table 6. Page 23, table 6.
Again, that figure will map out
sure,
work effort.
Sure, I marked it. That also, right. I see that. So I want to make sure I've got this right, Paul, and I'm going to write it down. What happened was that the department's work time transferred from compliance and enforcement to permitting. And I, as you mentioned somewhere in one of these tables, the number of permits were increasing for definitely for CAFOs. The number of permits were increasing or for not so much municipalities, but a little bit for industrial permits.
Correct.
Dramatically for CAFOs, like an 80% increase, something like that?
There was a very significant increase
for
CAFOs.
Very significant increase. So I'm curious, if the permits stayed the same, except in the case of CAFOs, but the compliance and enforcement dropped, and when I look at the table that you pointed out, figure 6, that looks like the number of FTEs dropped by about 20%, does this mean that compliance enforcement activities were let go, were not done? And I think this gets us to the question of the inspections and other types of enforcement activities.
Senator, I want to make sure that we're very clear on how figure 6 represents work effort and not positions. So, yes, the unit of analysis is positions, but I don't need to read it in figure 6 and see fiscal year 15 and read 34.8 positions, meaning actual job classification positions. This is a work effort estimate. So different than saying just a position decrease, meaning fewer assigned positions to that task. It's mm-hmm. a work effort measure in figure 6.
And the work effort measure, if I could think about the unit of analysis, what is it that we're measuring? Are we measuring coding? And if we are, one of my questions is, how confident are we in that data?
Yes, Senator, you're correct. We are measuring the time, staff, code to various activities. The Department of Natural Resources has one of the most extensive staff coding arrangements that I've seen in state government. And given our experience over time on a number of audits, we believe that it does have validity.
Mm-hmm.
It has what?
Validity.
Validity.
Validity. So we're confident in its validity. That's good. I wondered if we could then talk a little bit about page 47, figure 9. It'll take me a minute to get to it. So this is going into the details of monitoring and oversight. And it shows a dramatic drop in the well, maybe you could just explain the figure, and then I have some follow-up questions.
So for the committee, figure 9 on page 47 measures the percentage of major municipal and industrial permittees that were inspected at least once in each two-year period. The horizontal axis in the figure represents a rolling two-year period. So as you look across those particular times, you'll see that an overlapping year is used. So we measured ongoing two-year periods throughout that graph. In the two-year period 2005-2006, the major industrial permittees that had the inspections at that frequency were at 95%, and the major municipal at 92%. And then that dips in the two-year period 2010-2011, and then comes back up in the two-year period 2013-2014 to be 73% for major municipal permittees and 49% for major industrial permittees.
I did get a chance to read the agency's response dated November 18th, 2016. And on page 7, this is discussed, and I hope I'm not going too fast or I'm not going into a document that you don't have in front of you. But when I read this, when I read the document from the department and I read page 7, I was confused because page 47 of the audit shows that there are serious problems in the inspection of municipal and industrial, major municipal and industrial permittees. So I'm thinking to myself, what would this look like for my people in my district? And to me, this would look like a big city or a big industry that did a lot of discharging and had to be closely monitored because of how the quantity as well as the quality of what they were discharging. And I see a very, very big problem in figure 9. and so serious that over that two-year period, we were looking at only 21% of the permittees were inspected at least once in the two-year period, which was the goal. But then I looked on page 7 and I said, this is curious because DNR is saying they have met, this is the last sentence on page 7, they have met or exceeded the inspection goals, and they use the term compliance monitoring strategy. They have met or exceeded the inspection goals for major facilities since 2012 and has consistently met or exceeded the goals for minor facilities, which there just seem to be two very, very different descriptions of what was happening with these major polluters or potential polluters, major municipalities and industries. And I wondered if you could help me understand the difference in what's going on and what's real.
Thank you, Senator. I believe the difference is a different standard. Referencing again figure 9 on page 47 of our report, that shows DNR's performance with respect to its own inspection goals, full inspections of the major municipal and industrial permittees. And I believe what you're seeing on page 7 of DNR's response is their performance with respect to a different standard. If I understand it correctly, I believe they are including inspections of only the laboratory portion of many of these facilities, which EPA allows them to count in order to meet the standards that they have established for them. But that is different than the goal DNR had set for itself and the standard we were measuring them against.
Can you elaborate a little bit, Paul? Can you tell me what the standard was from DNR standard and what had been done in the past when we were looking back in 2005, 2006, the two-year period? We were looking at 95 for the major and 92% of the minor industrial – I'm sorry, 95 of the – major industries and 92% of the major municipalities were actually inspected every 2 years. So what was happening then in that 2005-2006 period that was not happening in the 2011-12, et cetera, periods that changed?
Yeah,
they didn't do it.
What were they doing? If they were only inspecting the labs, what were they doing before? Well, when they were actually meeting that their goal.
I'm sorry, Senator, I think I may have confused you. Figure 9...
That would be easy to do with this audit.
I apologize.
That's all right. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of what's actually happening and how it's changed in terms of what's going on in the inspection of major municipal and major industrial permittees, because I feel like if we're gonna eat this elephant and figure out how to fix this, we've got to get to the bottom of the problems with the big ones first, and then we've got to get to the problems with the little ones second. So that's why I'm focused on Figure 9, because this is where the big pollution happens, big in terms of volume, and that Figure 9 is pretty damning, and it's very different than what the department is saying.
So referring again solely to Figure 9, the standards there are consistent throughout all of the time period. So we're measuring DNR against its own standards, full inspections every other year for major municipal and industrial facilities. And the reduction you're seeing is literally a reduction in the extent to which they conducted full inspections of those facilities over these time periods. So that's perfectly consistent within this figure. Referring back to DNR's report on page 7, they're using a different standard there. So rather than using the standard of full inspections, they are also including inspections of the labs of these facilities as entire inspections. So holding them up as equal to what we would count as a full inspection from our report on page 47.
So if you do you have a feel for what a full inspection looks like? What would it be different from looking at the lab?
It would be typically an on-site inspection that would review all of the major components of the wastewater facility. It would be, you know, reviewing, visually inspecting different components, mechanisms. They do get reports submitted to them electronically on an ongoing basis, but the on-site inspection would be an opportunity for them to review the physical infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. So they could see if there was a facility aging or a machine that wasn't operating properly or a change to the process that they're using or some type of... You said that there was a change in standards, and that's why the report from DNR has such a different finding, because I would think of it as moving the goalpost. Instead of saying we met the goal, they move the goalpost closer, and then the kicker doesn't have to kick as far, and then he says, well, we met that goal. But we didn't actually move anywhere on the field. Are there any other examples in this report that I have of that changing the standard or moving the goalpost? Or is that too complicated of a question?
In terms of all of the changes DNR is considering and may have made, we don't have a comprehensive inventory of that. But during the course of our field work and during the exit process for this work product, they did indicate that they were in the process of changing some of their policies. So I think that's a question most appropriately left to the department to answer at this point.
One of the things I'm concerned about, Mr. Chairman, is the follow-up that happens after this audit, and I think it would be helpful in reading the audit and understanding the details if we could compile a list of all of the examples of where the standards have changed and maybe be able to make some judgment on whether or not that was a direction that was positive or not. And I will be glad to ask DNR this question, but I think it would be very helpful to have that information not only from in a verbal discussion, but also in some type of a document. So that's just kind of a data point for follow-up. But the other question I wondered, Mr. Chairman, is if you saw it fit that maybe we could bring the auditor back after the department has testified. So there's so many questions I have and so much different information that I read from the department and it says one story, and I read from the audit and it says another story, that I'm really struggling with how to reconcile these two very different stories. And one of the key data points seems to be a lack of staff, and I will ask the department about the staff, but I just wonder if you have any evidence of how many DNR positions are vacant now and where those positions are, and if we could see changes over time. And I'm talking more like during the audit period. So here are the vacant positions during the audit period, and then here are the vacant positions now, a year or so later. And that would help us, I think, get a handle on what some of the solutions are to some of these serious problems that we found, if we can see that. And I know that I'm asking for something that's beyond the scope of this audit, because I'm looking at all of the DNR positions, not just the DNR positions related to the audit. But I'm worried about what's going to happen next.
Yeah, Senator, again, I think we'll defer to DNR to answer your question about the status of staffing.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have a worksheet that gave you that kind of the breadth of that kind of information, as well as the specificity in terms of the individual positions and the divisions.
Our contribution to the understanding the committee has about staffing for the program was done in those figures that we walked through related to work effort.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much.
Could I just say, in regard to follow-up, for me, it doesn't end here with this committee hearing, and I plan on probably being a thorn in the side of the secretary and her staff to, you know, working with Joe Christman and his team to see, you know, what issues come out of this hearing. And, I mean, I feel that, you know, water quality is it's definitely a number one issue for the state, our state more than most states. And I think the people, our constituents, want that. So we have to keep clarifying and keep pushing them. But I have a question, Joe, just to clarify. The $61 million that's sent back to the general fund, that's by statute, correct? So this, the secretary, even if she wanted to have, or previous secretaries wanted to have more staff, they were impeded by that set of statutes. Is that correct?
The department would go through a process like any state agency would in requesting staff and having the legislature consider its request.
Right, right. Co-Chair Kirkman.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Back to page 47. It just is a striking chart here. And really in 2010, it took the dip, or 2011, as the department did a transition between different administrations, correct? It went down between 2009 and 10, but then, you know, the low point is in 2010 or 2011?
It's a 2 year period, so we'd say both. Okay. 2010, 2011.
Okay. Because, you know, it's hard. I'm trying to put this in real life perspective as I've been thinking and listening to the discussion, talking to businesses or municipalities with regards to water, because water is a huge issue down in my area and to a different front. But again, permitting is something when I have to talk to the one person in the county that controls a lot of the water. I had a business about 3 years ago that said, you know, they got this letter from the city of Kenosha, and they had to do some additional inspections. And things, this business is a small manufacturer, less than 50 employees in Kenosha County, and they had to spend money on getting their water, even though they discharged nothing outside of just the normal bathroom and their sink that they have in their kitchen. They don't put any other discharge in. But now they have to pay a fee and be inspected by the city of Kenosha, which then the state of Wisconsin requires them to do. So do these all intermingle?
Chairperson Kirkman, I'm not aware of how local regulations make come into play with respect to the wastewater program. It's my understanding that there would be limited authority of local governments to institute additional rules and regulations, but perhaps the department could.
And I'm trying to get a copy of that particular letter because I am curious to know. It was, you know, something that they said the state of Wisconsin, the local city of Kenosha was saying the state of Wisconsin is now requiring it because of additional changes and such. So just trying to, you know, put it in a real life practice, how this affects, you know, the businesses that are in our districts. And again, they wanted to comply. They didn't want to comply because they enjoy clean water in Kenosha County. But again, does this impact what the DNR is doing? And I'll ask the DNR when they come up because it's something in real life practice. And again, that drop off just went significant there during the change of administration. So I was wondering if that impacted it or technology came online because, again, you know, the federal government is coming down on us and requiring changes with regards to different standards and such.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I applaud the time that you've been in the legislature as being a real champion for protecting the waters of the state. I want to return to this issue of meeting the performance standards. Any good agency will develop performance standards by which they can sort of monitor how well they're doing in terms of performing their responsibilities. And it sounds to me like your audit identified that on at least a couple of performance standards, the DNR was not meeting their own performance standards. The reply says that, well, those were outdated standards and they're now being revised to be brought up to date. The way I read the department's reply was that they were they shouldn't be concerned about those old standards because they met the reporting standards that are required by the EPA. Was I correct in assessing the department's reply in that way?
Senator, I think that is fair.
Okay. Thank you. I've been on a Natural Resources Committee for a long time. And one of the things that has always been an administrative policy is the policy of stepped enforcement, whereby initial determinations of some sort of violation is done to get voluntary compliance and brought up to date. And then if that's not successful, stepped up into the final step would be a report to the Department of Justice for enforcement action. You identified a number of places where the department did not issue notices of violation. How would that, your critique of the department, fit into this idea of stepped enforcement? Do you understand the sort of where I'm trying to get to this question? Is stepped enforcement, are you criticizing the DNR, the department, because of the stepped enforcement may not have been the first action? I mean, they noticed a violation, but didn't issue a notice because they're able to get voluntary compliance.
Senator, I think I understand your question, and Paul and I will both contribute to the answer. Let me start by framing for the committee where some of the information that you're citing is found in the audit report. So on page 60 in table 12, we describe DNR's enforcement process as stepped in nature, and we'll list each and one of those enforcement steps and describe it to you. We also counted there in our auditor-like way the number of actions that were taken by DNR at each one of those steps. That's the rightmost column in the 10-year period of our review from 2005 through 2014. So as you read through that table, you'll become familiar with terms like notice of noncompliance, notice of violation, enforcement conference, and then, as you mentioned, a referral to law enforcement. There's examples in the table that'll point to circumstances in which those steps would be taken and how that would help a reader of the audit report get a context for what stepped enforcement looks like. So that's piece of information one. What I'll ask Paul to do for you is describe the finding that is discussed at the bottom of page 69 and going into page 70, and that relates to table 15 and our finding with respect to the notices of violation.
Thank you. With respect to your question, Senator, we are in no way criticizing the stepped enforcement process. We recognize that as a standard and appropriate process to follow. What we identified in Table 15 are, again, standards that the department established for itself when exceedances reach a point that enhanced enforcement is necessary. Again, referring to page 62, table 15, here we identify all the exceedances associated with effluent from 2005 through 2014. And so there are literally tens of thousands of exceedances over the time period we reviewed. Yet DNR has established criteria to indicate that when the number of exceedances exceeds so many within a set time period and beyond a certain threshold, then enhanced enforcement is necessary. And that's what you see in Table 15 on page 69. So those 558 instances in which a notice of violation should have been issued are not simply instances in which one exceedance occurred. They are multiple exceedances beyond a specific threshold, depending on the type of pollutant that was being monitored for.
Right, and that's what I thought was being indicated is that these are significant and they are subsequent to the informal process. And then even then, when a notice of a violation was justified, they were not issued in these circumstances.
Okay, that's great.
There's quite a bit of discussion about the multi-discharge variance that was under consideration by the EPA for extended period of time, and just today you reported that it was approved in February of this year. Can you characterize, I know you're not policy folks, you're auditors, but is it possible for you to be able to characterize what were the elements of that multi-discharge variance?
For the committee's benefit, we do discuss on page 78 and 79 in the future considerations chapter the context for that decision. But Senator, to the extent that you're asking me to speak to what was approved on February 6th, I do want to defer to the department to speak to that specifically. I think they're in a better position to respond.
Okay. Do we have any documents? You can ask him
that. The
documents that would give us the
variance. Oh, I think the department will have documentation as to the request for variance. I would.
Yes, and in fact, quite a few of those documents are available on their website.
Okay.
It's good to get.
All right, thank you. Thank you. I think the other questions I had, Mr. Chair, were asked by either you or
Circle
Senator
Circle back
Brian,
if you think of something. Representative Sargent.
Thank you, Chairman mm-hmm. Coles. I'm wondering if you could help me understand a few things. On page 18, under the fee revenue, we've already clarified the fact that the revenue goes back into GPR, correct? It doesn't stay within the DNR?
Just a slight adjustment. It goes to the general fund.
The general fund. Okay. That being said, I look at these fees, so $500 or for a major discharger, $250 for a minor discharger, $395 for CAFOs. That are how often are those fees assessed? Is that an annual fee? Is that for the period of the license? Is that monthly? How frequently would that fee be assessed?
Those are annual fees as described on page 18, yes.
So I just, as Senator Vinehout was pointing out, the size, the magnitude of discharge that could potentially be impacting the community, the fact that we're not doing a very good job at, from my understanding, enforcing. This seems like a very small fee, $500 for a major discharger, $250 for a minor discharger, $395 for a CAFO on an annual basis, simply for the permitting? Is that for the licensing or permitting? Could you just clarify what that fee covers?
The fee that's collected, again, most of it is not going back to DNR, at least going back to DNR directly. And so there's no direct correlation between what is collected and what the fee is actually covering. Some of it is retained by DNR, and some of it is GPR that is being put back into the department to help finance its various functions. But there's not a one-to-one correlation between the fee and the activities that are being performed in response to the regulatory activities that DNR has.
So was there any, what percentage of a budget for a major discharger would $500 be, for example? What is that defined as? I mean, is this like very small amounts?
In terms of the business's total revenues?
Right.
For most of them, I would imagine it would be fairly small.
And then do they, in addition, have to pay fees to their local municipalities or counties on top of this for permitting, or is this it, just to the state?
In terms of the wastewater program, it's my understanding that this would be the total fees. DNR is responsible for that. And
thank you.
Representative Brousseau.
A follow-up to that. This fee amount, could the DNR request to raise that fee, do that unilaterally? Would they have to do that through the budget? And could they change the ratio of what comes back to the agency to be used in this program of compliance and enforcement? Could they ask for those changes in either legislation or the budget?
Yes, they could ask for those changes, but those are statutorily established and established through administrative rules, so there would have to be
a process. So we would have to change that, and then we would change the ratio that goes back to the department so that perhaps they'd get more of this money, and we would have to change how they could use it.
That's correct. It would require legislative authorization.
Okay. And has DNR requested that? That you know of?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah. Co-Chair Kirkland.
I just want to follow up on Representative Sargent and Brousseau, because, again, I think we've lost. This is a permit. This is a fee. But they still would have to pay the municipality for cleaning their discharge water and such, right? Businesses still, you know, that when they purchase water from a municipality and they send the water back, they're being charged on their usage, correct, for the most part.
I think maybe what you're wanting to clarify, Representative Kirkman, is the statement that the fee is the entire fee with respect to this program, and that's true. There may be other fees paid for other purposes, but that this fee, this would represent the total fees that it would be charged.
So like Niagara Bottling, for instance, is a water bottler that chose Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin to be their home and not Racine County. I'm sure they pay this fee because they take a lot of water out of Lake Michigan, but they return water too not needed in their production. Or Ocean Spray, which, again, people ask me all the time why I chose cranberries to be the state fruit, and it was a kid's. But I got to tour the Ocean Spray plant, which is in the city of Kenosha. They're one of our largest water users as well, but they also have discharge because, again, cranberries to be put into all that great cranberry juice that we drink, raspberry cranberry, blueberry cranberry, everything. So they probably have to pay that $500 fee because they're a larger discharge user. And maybe I'll ask the secretary this question or somebody from her team. But they also pay, though, the city of Kenosha for usage of that water, and their discharge. Because, again, there's a cost to that, correct, for municipalities and for businesses. Okay.
But just to follow up on that, what Co-Chair Kirkman said, as far as we know, the DNR is the enforcement entity on water quality considerations. It's not the local government. So, any other questions from Representative Brousseau?
Well, just a follow-up to that. Yes, I understand it's a permit. However, if enforcement and compliance and enforcement is an issue, which statistically it's saying it is, there might be a difference in opinion, but statistically it's saying that enforcement and compliance is not meeting expectations or goals, then one way to build capacity would be to look at these permits and say they're relatively low. I can afford 250 or 500, well, maybe not right now, but I could afford those fees, and I am not a multi-million dollar business. And if my business might cause some significant damage to the environment, sometimes incalculable, it seems to me that there would be a reason for the department to want to build capacity for enforcement. They'd have to come to us, yes, but I do understand it's a permit. But to wait until after something has happened and they are going to pay for it when you don't have the capacity to begin with to monitor compliance, it, to me, is waiting till the horse is out of the barn. So anyway, I guess call it what you want, but it seems minor in comparison to the potential for damage. Thank you.
Right, so there's an equity issue, perhaps, and maybe we can dig into how other states are handling the equity, the volume, size of the company, and then there's the issue of you're paying the money, and most of it's going to the general fund. At the same time, they don't have the staff, apparently. We'll hear more in a few minutes. Other questions from committee members? If not, Joe and Paul, thank you very much for your great work. Secretary Stepp and Wisconsin DNR, speaking for information, Mark Arvino. Am I pronouncing that right, Mark? Also with the secretary, and Pat Stevens, also with the secretary. Welcome, all of you. Thank you very much for being here.
Do we have your statement?
Do we have your statement, or is that being circulated? Okay.
Good morning, Co-Chair Coles, Co-Chair Kirkman, committee members. Thank you so much for having us this morning. And believe it or not, I actually mean that sincerely. I know that that can be a challenge for agencies to come before the Legislative Audit Committee, but I'm very appreciative for this effort that we went through, which was a really extraordinary, detailed look back through the history of this particular program at Wisconsin DNR that we're entrusted to run through delegation from the US EPA. And of course, we take that very seriously. There's been a lot of different questions that were asked of Audit Bureau that I'm hopeful, if I don't remember to address those directly, perhaps you'd be gracious enough to restate those questions, and our staff will be more than willing to answer those questions for you as clearly as we possibly can. I'm joined this morning by two of our division administrators, Mark Aquino to my left, and all the way to my other left, or continuing to the left, is Pat Stevens. Both these gentlemen have intimate and intricate knowledge of these programs that we're talking about today. So on some of the more technical, detailed stuff, I'll probably defer to them if that's okay with all of you. And I'm also going to, unfortunately, I'm going to have to indulge myself a little bit here and read my written comments to you. Which I typically don't like to do. I like to just kind of submit that and then just talk and be able to engage right away in a question-answer. But I think because of the technicality and the intricacies of these particular programs, it's important for the viewing audience and the public to be able to hear what was actually written. So if you'd please indulge me, I appreciate that. Before I go further, I do want to give sincere thanks to the Audit Bureau, to Joe and his team. These are really difficult things to sort through, and Joe got to jump into the deep end of our pool when it came to looking through all of the myriads of databases and kind of the scotch-taped, you know, together spreadsheets and information depositories that had been accumulating over Wisconsin DNR in Wisconsin DNR over the last several decades. And this isn't just in this program. This is something, obviously, we're working to address since my coming into this role 6 years ago, which is to streamline our IT, get our systems working and communicating with each other. It is a huge problem and a challenge that we're all going through in different agencies of state government. And, man, I had no idea when I was sitting on your side of the desk just how extraordinary it really was and how difficult it is, frankly, to be able to dive in and diagnose what an actual problem is and then, of course, to come up with realistic solutions. So thank you, Joe, for your team for swimming in the deep end with us. I appreciate that. As we've stated in our correspondence in the past several months and with this committee and the state auditor, we welcome these recommendations to help us make additional improvements to our programs. This analysis will help assist the department in our efforts to identify efficiencies, augment compliance, and enhance water quality by issuing and managing practical and effective water discharge permits. We're also aware that many of the issues identified by the Audit Bureau have existed for some time, indeed over many years and several administrations. And when we came to the DNR in 2011, we found issue with vacancy rates and permit backlogs in the WPDS permit programs and others, but today we're just focusing on these. In addition, in 2009, the US EPA had completed a review of our water programs, and they identified 75 issues that needed addressing regarding our authority to implement these very important programs. And while we recognize the legacy issues we've inherited, we also recognize these are our problems to solve. And we've not only found the report to be largely consistent with our ongoing efforts, we think we've made substantial progress to resolve the issues identified in the report. And I'm going to break from my formal remarks for just a moment to stress this. I want all of you to know, and all of our legislative representatives and the public to know, we weren't waiting for an audit to be able to dig into some of these challenges that we've got in our most important programs, I feel, are most important when it comes to protecting water quality. A lot of these things we had already embarked on, but we had a lot of different foundational building blocks and research, frankly, to put into place before we were able to actually implement some of the reforms we've been doing as of late. That progress included initiating actions to address 73 of the 75 EPA issues and completing a Lean Six Sigma project on the WPDS permitting process to help address the backlog. The Lean project identified 84 recommendations to improve the permitting process, and we are currently in the process of implementing those recommendations. I'd also like to touch on a number of other recommendations from LAB report and provide some clarifying comments, and of course answer questions that you have as we continue to work collaboratively with you and others. Regarding CAFO staffing, as we stated back in June and again in November of 2016, we agreed with the number of hours associated with the CAFO program that was based on the time code research. In our report back to LAB, four of the six recommendations included in the LAB report for CAFOs involved the work conducted by 10.5 regional staff, and that in order to accomplish all of the required work, there would need to be a CAFO permit to staff ratio of 20-1. We have already reallocated four full-time employee positions to the CAFO program to meet that ratio and increase compliance monitoring. The effort to begin reallocating those FTE began in the summer of 2016, was submitted to our Natural Resources Board for consideration in September of 2016. Because these positions were vacant at the time of reallocation, there is no immediate or direct impact on core work for the three programs that contributed their positions to the CAFO program. As to the LAB recommendation to make CAFO application materials available through a website, we have already begun taking these steps to achieve this goal. We agree that easy access through the website is important. For more than 5 years, we've made materials related to CAFO WPDS permits available online, including publicly noticed WPDS permits and fact sheets, a searchable online permit database which provides real-time information on the numbers, size, and type of CAFO operations throughout the state, and application materials for high-profile CAFO permits. Almost 2 years ago, the DNR public noticed and made materials related to substantial modifications, such as the addition of new fields to CAFO nutrient management plans, which we call NMPs, available online. In March of 2016, CAFOs were required to submit design plans electronically, which were then viewable online by members of the public. The remaining step to make all of the CAFO permit application materials available online is to develop a website to receive that application form, the 5-year nutrient management plan, two critical pieces which are to ensure a complete application. Currently, the system has been developed and we are now in the testing phase. All new CAFO application materials submitted after the online system is operational will be accessible to the public through our DNR website. What this means is all documents submitted by the applicant will be available to the public prior to public notice of the draft permit. Please note that this effort has been an ongoing effort as part of a phased-in approach to online applications that began prior to our LAB audit process, moving from the less complex to the more complex processes. DNR has developed and is implementing a plan to decrease the municipal and industrial wastewater WPDS permit backlog. This plan includes filling vacant positions, redistributing work among staff across the state, and continuing our implementation of process improvements. The plan focuses on reissuing the oldest permits in the backlog first. As stated in LAB's report, the permit backlog was on an increasing trend from 2005 through 2012. Since that time, we have made significant progress on decreasing the backlog, and some of the diagrams that LAB was referring to already are showing that. The backlog for municipal and industrial permits has decreased from a high of 35.4% in 2012 down to under 20% today. We anticipate a continued reduction in the backlog as this plan continues to be implemented throughout the year. To reiterate, we are committed to reducing, the current permit backlog for municipal and industrial permits to below 10%, which is considered to be the national goal set by the US EPA. We anticipate that we will achieve this goal by December 2018, even though there will be challenges. For example, I mentioned we're working hard on filling vacancies. One of our challenges that we, as well as others even in the private sector, face is that we continue to lose experienced staff due to retirements or pursuit of other career opportunities. We have developed and implemented a plan to regularly assess our performance in conducting inspections of both municipal and industrial permittees by providing additional training, development of additional planning and tracking tools, and establishing more specific individual performance goals for our inspectors. We first introduced the plan in the Green Bay field office, as this was the area with the highest permit backlog. This plan is now being implemented in other offices statewide. The plan includes a new tool for planning inspections, a detailed tracking spreadsheet, and regular check-ins by the supervisor to make sure we are meeting our targets. Our inspection goals meet the federal requirements. DNR annually commits to inspection goals by submitting a compliance monitoring strategy known as CMS, reflecting the national goals that are set by EPA. The goals established in the CMS for municipal and industrial facility inspections are one inspection for all major facilities every 2 years and one inspection for minor facilities every 5. DNR submits both mid-year CMS inspection numbers and end-of-the-year CMS inspection numbers annually to EPA. Additionally, CMS describes national goals and requirements for pretreatment program audits and inspections, biosolids inspections, combined sewer overflow inspections, and industrial and MS4 stormwater inspections. All of these metrics are evaluated and reported semi-annually to EPA Region 5. As indicated in our report to LAB, we have met or exceeded the CMS inspection goals for major facilities since 2012, and we have consistently met or exceeded the goals for minor facilities. The CAFO permitting program assesses its performance of inspecting CAFO facilities with respect to the goals set by EPA and reports those inspection numbers to EPA every 6 months. The goal for CAFO facility inspections that is put through at EPA are one inspection per permit term. This goal is consistently met by DNR. As stated earlier, with respect to municipal and industrial facility inspections, DNR annually commits to inspection goals by submitting a CMS report that reflects the national goals set by EPA. The DNR submits both mid-year CMS inspection numbers and end-of-the-year CMS inspection numbers annually to EPA. The LAB report noted that the number of inspections for CAFOs has more than doubled over the audit period. Also noted in the report is that the program conducts more frequent inspections of CAFOs with previous violations, an example of how we're prioritizing staff time to focus our inspection efforts. However, the program continues to set a goal of increasing the number of inspections, and as already stated since the report came out, we have reallocated 4 positions to reduce the number of permittees per regional staff to 20-1. This will allow staff more time to be in the field and to work on the goal of 2 inspections per permit term, which would exceed EPA's goals. Conducting inspections within 2 years of permit reissuance will allow permittees time to address potential non-compliant issues during years 3 and 4 and will help avoid delays in permit reissuance at year 5. This goal has now been added to our staff expectations, their performance reviews, and supervisors have revisited program priorities to achieve these goals. We plan to improve the timeliness of substantial compliance determinations and documentation of such by pursuing the following 3 activities. Number 1, we've already talked about the reallocation of 4 FTE positions to the CAFO program. The performance objectives for staff will include conducting the proper inspections to determine substantial compliance consistent with state law and recording those determinations in the database. The substantial compliance inspections should occur within 1 year of the reissuance date, which would be year 4. DNR is reviewing the existing guidance on determination of substantial compliance that was developed for wastewater WPDS program to be more specific to the inspection of a CAFO facility and easier for CAFO staff to use. We acknowledge that there have been historical issues with formally documenting inspections and making determinations of substantial compliance and that we need to improve. New staff have received specific training on both the determination procedure and the requirement for documentation. This concept was further reinforced for all staff at a statewide meeting we had in November of 2016. We have also completed a set of training materials, standard operating procedures, template letters, and checklists to improve the consistency in the program, and these things did not exist before. One-on-one training with all new staff is being conducted by the CAFO program's compliance and enforcement coordinator, a position that we created 2 years ago to improve consistency in this program. With the addition of 4 more positions and filling vacant positions, the majority of our regional staff will be new. training on standard operating procedures, documentation in the database, and format of the documentation is underway with all of our CAFO staff, new and existing. Talking about enforcement actions, the department operates under a stepped enforcement approach. This means that for most cases, we start with the lowest possible enforcement approach, which would be an informal discussion or a notice of noncompliance, an NON, and only escalates to a more aggressive approach, which would be the notice of violation, enforcement conference, or DOJ referral, if a more collaborative approach does not result in compliance. As an aside, a notice of noncompliance is a letter that we author our wastewater compliance staff, which is typically used to document minor violations and require correction within a specified period of time. A notice of violation is a formal letter that is authored by our environmental enforcement specialists that provides specific notice of alleged violations and the potential consequences like fines and forfeitures allowed by statute. An NOV will most often schedule an enforcement conference where DNR and the permittee meet to discuss compliance issues. We have developed and are implementing a strategy to regularly assess our performance in regard to compliance at municipal and industrial facilities and to increase the consistency between our enforcement policies and our actual practice of issuing notices of violations. Our strategy includes updating our enforcement handbook, providing statewide training to staff to ensure consistency and scheduling specific training in each of the offices with the environmental enforcement staff. Our supervisors will ensure enforcement practices are implemented according to the revised handbook and will work directly with our staff to ensure statewide consistency. We held a wastewater program meeting for all of our staff and supervisors in October of 2016 that focused on this enforcement strategy. We agree with the LAB finding that consistency in the documentation processes for enforcement actions can be improved by utilizing a central database. We continue to work on addressing these inconsistencies in documentation, and we believe the audit report would have more accurately reflected enforcement activities if all of the notices of noncompliance and less formal enforcement actions had been recorded and stored in a database. DNR has consistently responded to noncompliance issues at the most appropriate level given the nature and circumstances of the violation. In most cases, enforcement efforts don't need to be elevated to an NOV to achieve compliance. The updated guidance clarifies individual enforcement steps, including informal and formal actions, and clearly defines for staff the standardized documentation process for all enforcement actions. As was stated in the follow-up report, we believe that the stepped enforcement process and compliance assistance is generally more effective and efficient in achieving corrective actions than beginning with an NOV. In many cases, compliance is restored by mutual agreement with the facility on steps needed to correct a non-compliance issue at the conclusion of an inspection. This saves time and money for the facility and the DNR in follow-up activities. And I would also stress to you that this also helps us correct whatever violation is happening faster versus going through an arduous formal process. And we're seeing definite quicker results on the ground to protect the environment. A consistent approach to enforcement has been developed in a program handbook to establish one tool for determining compliance. Training's underway for new and experienced staff, and program managers are committed to a consistent approach statewide. We agree with the audit findings regarding the need to increase consistency of the enforcement in the CAFO program around the state. As was stated in the LAB report, DNR staff conduct more frequent inspections at facilities where a previous violation has occurred. We also conduct inspections in response to complaints. However, we currently do not track complaints in a way that would indicate whether a complaint resulted in an enforcement action. We have taken several steps to address the inconsistency of the enforcement around the state. And one of the most notable things that we did, which we had done throughout the department over the last 6 years, was in July of 2015, we modified our reporting structure to align organization, which means all field staff and field supervisors within a program now report to the program director within central office instead of reporting to regional supervisors. One of the main reasons for implementing this change was to further increase consistency in permitting, inspections, and enforcement around the state. And I'm going to go off my prepared remarks for a moment just to elaborate on this for you. This is really important when we talk about consistent application of rule and law and enforcement standards and practices across the state. Because what was happening before is the communication would stop at the regional level. So we would see that all of the five different regions that had their regional directors at the time really kind of ran their own, what I call mini DNRs, if you will. And so it really doesn't allow for consistency, for effective tracking of what's going on as far as enforcement or even permit issuances, for example, and making sure that companies who are producing or facilities that are discharging understand what are the rules and that they have a firm understanding of the expectations and to know that they will be treated in a consistent way no matter what part of the state that they're from. The law is the law and should comply equally across regions. With the high staff turnover rate, consistency has been difficult in areas of the state where multiple vacancies have occurred. Once all vacancies in the four new positions are filled, our program will have 9 new regional staff out of a complement of 14 and a half statewide. This results in the need to conduct training, but it also provides an opportunity to start with an expectation that enforcement will be consistently applied and documentation procedures strictly followed. We talked about the handbook for staff specifics on enforcement procedures that include standard operating procedures, talked about the template letters and checklists to guide our staff, and then the existing system of tracking complaints received through DNR's hotlines for spills and complaints are going to be further developed so that resolution of those complaints will be better tracked. This will increase our ability to generate management reports, to assess the need for additional inspections, and to track enforcement trends. On phosphorus. Phosphorus pollution rules are intended to improve water quality in Wisconsin, as we all know. However, the cost for facilities to upgrade a wastewater treatment plant with technology to remove phosphorus is substantial. For this reason, the department has worked hard to develop the framework for alternative compliance options like water quality trading and the multiple discharger variants. The department also created other compliance options and has given longer timelines for permittees to comply with the stringent phosphorus standards. We submitted the final extensive multi-discharger variants package to EPA in March of 2016, and in February of 2017, yes, that's almost a year later, we got approval from the EPA on this particular plan. We continue to work with the regulated community to consider their phosphorus compliance options, and we are fully prepared to implement the MDV. DNR has made substantial progress to resolve the issues that were identified in the letter that I received in 2011 regarding a 10-year look back. It was a review in 2009 that EPA did on our water WPDS permit program. We initiated actions to address 73 of the 75 issues. Of those 73, 21 have been resolved and approved by EPA. 21 are under review by EPA, 11 are currently in our rulemaking process, 9 have been provisionally addressed but need statutory or rule changes, and 13 of the 75 are continuing to be discussed with EPA. Of the 2 remaining issues, one issue needs to be addressed through legislation, which is the number of petitioners needed to challenge a permit, and a resolution to the other issue, which is relating to waiving environmental requirements in an emergency, is being discussed with EPA. To date, EPA has agreed that 21 of the 75 have been fully resolved, and they currently have a number of other changes under review to determine whether the agency agrees that these changes will address the issues that they raised. Let's talk about addressing groundwater contamination in Kewaunee County, a longtime legacy problem. In regards to addressing groundwater contamination in Kewaunee County, we've begun implementing a number of recommendations made by our groundwater collaboration work group, which include implementing additional field audits of manure spreading practices, reallocating the 4 staff to the CAFO program, revising emergency manure spreading guidance, holding an informational meeting with Kewaunee County citizens regarding the recommendations, and providing area farmers with recommended revised manure spreading practices. In addition, we're in the process of implementing more recommendations through revisions to the administrative rule that establishes non-point source pollution performance standards, which is NR 151. These revisions are intended to provide targeted pollution reducing performance standards for sensitive karst areas wherever they might occur in the state. The rule scoping statement was approved by the governor and our Natural Resources Board over the summer of 2016, and a technical advisory committee has held 5 meetings since October of 2016. The 6th and last of NR 151's meetings is actually finishing up today. The feedback we receive from this committee will help in the development of the rule, and we're still on track to have a draft administrative rule revision ready for public comment this summer. A final package is anticipated to be submitted to the legislature for approval in 2018. We're also helping to fund a private well study through the University of Oshkosh that is the most extensive of any kind done in Wisconsin's history. Again, this speaks to this administration taking action and working to remedy a decades-old legacy problem by using sound science, engaging communities, engaging citizens who have been negatively impacted for decades, and really coming to solutions for these problems. Authorized in the fall of 2015, DNR is spending $80,000 on the study, of which we've already spent $40,000, with the remaining $40,000 slated to be spent this next fiscal year. In addition, we're also expecting $45,000 from the UW Water Resources Institute and $57,500 from EPA to help fund the study. We started sampling in November 2015, and the project goes through September of 2017. We've already begun, by the way, implementing many of the suggestions that we could see we could roll into NR 151 in our conversations about revising that rule. Other recommendations include reviewing and revising well contamination investigations, clarifying eligibility and process for supplying emergency drinking water, improving response coordination to contamination events between local governments and the state, and providing increased consistency in compliance activities. I know that was a lot of words and a lot of information, but the other thing I just wanted to talk about, and I'm only going to do that because of my passion for this issue, when we're talking about groundwater quality, most notably in Kewaunee County, and again, this affects other areas of the state, but one of the very first groups that came to visit me when I got this job 6 years ago was residents from Kewaunee County. Who have been crying out for many, many years to see changes and meaningful reforms and meaningful rules and best management practices in their backyards to help protect their family and to make sure that they have safe, clean drinking water for their families. And I know it has not moved as fast as the impacted families would like to have seen, and my heart goes out to them because the challenge that we had, frankly, was making sure that we had sound science, that we weren't having knee-jerk reactions or asking for things that would not actually solve the problem. And those of you who have known me for a long time, I hope know that I'm not into bumper sticker politics, that to me this is about really solving the problems that are on the ground, and I know you all feel the same way about this. I really firmly believe that this detailed private well study that we've done that has uncovered a tremendous amount of science, we're going to have a lot of recommendations coming out of that. Some of those will actually be legislative suggestions for all of you to ponder. But to really solve this problem in this lifetime is critical. And time is of the essence, and I'm very excited about how fast we've been able to move these NR 151 revisions through. I'm excited about the public input process that we've had. We've had neighbors who've been impacted negatively. We've had county government, EPA, DATCAP's been involved, university researchers. We wanted to have the best science product that Wisconsin can lead the way on clean drinking water for our citizens in Wisconsin. So at that, as we continue to talk about this, I just appreciate you giving me a little bit of indulgence to kind of stand on my soapbox for a moment and express my passion for this issue and how I look forward to your help in the coming months as we look to solve these problems. Thank you.
Madam Secretary, the two division heads, they're just here for
questions. They have nothing to say right now until I don't know the answer.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Explain what's going on with municipal and industrial. I understand you've added four positions to the CAFO area.
Yes.
How are we getting the permit problem and enforcement problem under control in those other two areas?
So I'll talk a little bit about the backlog that we were experiencing. And one of the challenges that we had was the phosphorus rules that came into effect that were passed, I think it was in 2010. And then we needed to implement that when we came in 2011. And this was probably the second most number of contacts that I got, or at least on the issue area, which was the cost of implementation for municipal and industrial sources. And of all sizes, by the way, not just large industrial sources. When it came to what kind of control technology they would need to put in place at their facilities, the amount of investment, and what that would mean to ratepayers, your constituents, when it came to paying their quarterly or semi-annual bills for their sewer usage, sewer and water. So this was one of the things that we really struggled with. You all in the legislature gave us the direction then to do an economic impact analysis to make sure that we understood what the economic impacts would be of these phosphorus regulations. That took some time to do. DOA was involved in that process. And then once we finally completed that, I mean, it was quite eye-opening and really validated a lot of the things that I had been hearing. Of course, then we sent that to EPA, and it took almost a year for EPA to approve that. But some permits were held up in the meanwhile because requiring them to meet those phosphorus standards that were in place as part of a renewed permit, they wouldn't have been able to do that, given the costs for the capital infrastructure that we were looking at. So that was part of the explanation for the backlog. But the other thing that we did, Senator, was something rather innovative in state government, and it shouldn't be, but it was finding, okay, we've got a hot spot, if you will, of an issue over here. We need to solve this backlog problem and put the public's mind at ease when it came to making sure we're doing our jobs, issuing permits, and requiring compliance with what's on the page. So by reallocating four positions from different parts of the department, that was one of the biggest first steps, and then, of course, kind of an all-hands-on-deck throughout the entire program to be able to address these permit needs.
So we haven't added additional positions for industrial. I know we've got
the
phosphorus issue.
The WPDS, the whole program is actually part of the same staffing. So they cover all the different areas of that.
How long do you think it'll take to get us to that 10% goal for all three of the?
Well, I think end of 2018, if I remember right, was in my comments already. So that's our goal. But we always look to beat it.
Okay. Questions from committee members? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I get quite a few contacts from constituents who are very concerned about whether or not the department has been performing the responsibilities that we've assigned to it in terms of protecting the waters of the state of Wisconsin. So rather than starting off with that criticism, I want to, at least in one instance, congratulate the department for what is happening here in the Yahara watershed in Dane County. Is